Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, and as always, we have our crime fiction picks of the month with my partners in crime, Molly O'Dense, senior editor of Crime Reads, Scott Montgomery, crime fiction coordinator, Book People, and our latest member of our team, Amanda Moore, who has a legal thriller.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
And to get started, I'm actually going to share a book that I read back in 1978-1979 for Black History Month, and the name of the book is The Spook Who Sat by the Door. And it's by Sam Greeley. And I'm reading directly from Wikipedia because I read the book 40 plus years ago. It is the fictional story of Dan Freeman, the first Black CIA officer, and of the CIA's history of training persons and political groups who later used their specialized training in gathering intelligence, political subversion, and guerrilla warfare against the CIA. The novel has been described as part thriller, part satire, and part social commentary. And so for Black History Month, I'm recommending this book, published in 1969 by Sam Greeley, The Spook Who Sat by the Door. And I remember reading it as a 19, 20-year-old idealistic young man, thinking about here is an individual protagonist that learns from the inside and uses that skill set to work with Black groups and organizations to help Black people to become free. So that is my crime fiction pick of the month for Black History Month. So I'm going to ask all three of you, have any of you heard of that book before?
Yes, that and the movie.
There we go.
And it's got a great ending to it. Or like a reveal or twist to it that I really love that I don't want to give away.
I learned about it because of, what was that really good book by Lauren Jackson? No, Lauren Wilkinson, American Spy. Yeah.
American Spy. That was a great
Lauren,
book.
Lauren Wilkinson was like, she was pointing out that the legacy of Black espionage novels is like, starts with that Horace Greeley novel.
Sam Greeley.
Sam Greeley. Ah, oh my God, I'm getting all
right, Amanda.
I haven't heard of that one or read it, but I have it on my to be read list right now. So thank you, Hopeton.
All right, so let's start with our crime fiction picks of the month for the month of February outside of Black History Month. And Scott, I'm going to start with you.
I'm going to go with, one of my favorite authors, and I do want to warn people with this because there's nothing socially redeeming about it, but it's incredibly fun. Corey's Blood by Max Allen Collins. And this is dealing with his character, Corey, who is a hitman. This is a hitman at 70, though. And him kind of being drawn into one last job to by a journalist, and I can't say much more about the journalist because there's you find something about her, and it's the closest I can think of Max Allen Collins with this character doing something kind of reflective. But don't get me wrong, it's a lot of still of shooting people and having sex with beautiful women, even though he's in his 70s. And I feel a little odd because I have two very strong feminist women here, and we're all feminists in the way. There's the term broad is used once or twice throughout this book, so it's just so you know, it's very much like he meant to do this as a throwback to those kind of books, and it very much is, and it's just a really fun, tight read. So,
all right, Scott, I got to jump in here and say Max Allen Collins is probably in his 70s or 80s. So you think he's fantasizing?
Yeah,
I thought he was younger than that. Isn't he younger than that?
Not much more. He's in his 60s at least. Okay. Oh, no, he's got to be in his 70s because I was reading him as a teenager. So
he is 73 years old.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. Oh, he had a great mustache in the 70s.
All right. Molly.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to say I don't object to the amount of broads or casual sex in Max Allen Collins novels. But I do think that the ladies in there need to be a little bit meatier to be proportional to the size of their assets. They are not realistic. Like, if you're going to make the girl that tall and skinny, then give her a little bit less in terms of curvaceousness. Let's keep it, you know, biologically accurate.
Let's be real, Molly. If you're a 70-year-old, you're not pulling the model thin woman.
Well, and anyway, the model thin ladies have, you know, smaller boobs. If they had larger breasts, then they would be dealing with Emily Ratajkowski's like issues, where she has been like shamed for having too large breasts to be a proper model. Anyway,
good thing this isn't on KZI anymore.
Didn't people used to listen to this after church on?
Oh, KZI, yeah.
Between church and
this
podcast will not be released on a Sunday.
Yeah, but I loved as soon as you said we're not on KZI, you can swear you can do whatever you want. We just immediately went right off the rails into this.
Hey, look, I know I don't have to worry about that with Amanda Moore.
Oh, well, I was thinking the suspension of disbelief is there for a reason. So you can pretty much get away with anything you want in a book. People can have all types of features that don't belong together. So there you go.
But I do have a correction. Amanda corrected me. She doesn't have an agent yet. So there
not yet. Is
not yet. But wait, everybody, let's cross our fingers for Amanda Moore.
That's right. If I say I have one, then, you know, that puts them away. So no, I don't. But I am looking, so there you go.
So Amanda, your book.
Yes, so Black History Month, I wanted to highlight a debut author. His name is Brendan Slocum, and he wrote a book. I brought visual aids, The Violin Conspiracy. And what I really liked about this book, it's the good old fashioned mystery. A violin, a very expensive violin, is stolen. I'm going to say it incorrectly. Would I be giving away, Molly, to say what kind of violin it is? Would that be giving it away?
No, we learned that pretty easily.
Okay, it's a Stradivarius. Is that I'm saying it correctly? But it's
Stradivarius.
That's Stradivarius. A famous violin. Yeah.
Yes, famous. It's worth millions of dollars, and it gets stolen. And so the conspiracy is what happened, right? And so I really liked it. It had some historical aspects. You start getting into a past in slavery, right? You start dealing with the elitism, racism, even in the orchestra kind of classic industry and international aspects. So I think he hits on a lot of cool points that a lot of people would like. So that's my first pick for the February selection.
I completely agree with you about how good the mystery was. And like, I think that was my favorite thing about it, even though part of me I would have loved the book just as much as I loved it for the mystery, for its characters, for its setting, for its in-depth like exploration of the intersection of history and crime and ownership, but also it was a damn good mystery. Yeah. And I don't think I've read anything in a while that had so many plausible red herrings. Like,
yes. And it had some legal stuff, Hopeton. It had some legal stuff, you know, you had at least a couple lawyers in there. That's always a good thing.
Hey, Amanda, we may ask you every month, the legal thriller. Are there enough good legal thrillers, Amanda, for you to have a legal thriller of the month?
I'll have to search. I'll have to find it, because some aren't pegged as legal thrillers, but they have a legal aspect to it. So this had family drama, which is always good.
Well, I guess to novels where the protagonist is a lawyer. How about that?
Okay. I'll take the assignment.
Well, I think it's like just a legal aspect to it. Oh, Amanda, did you read Chandler Baker's novel, The Husband?
No, I haven't.
That was like a reverse Stepford Wives, where a high-powered female lawyer gets into couples therapy with her husband and finds out that she can use a clicker to get her husband to do anything she wants him to.
Oh, what's the name of that series? The Black, what's the name of that sci-fi series, that anthology?
Black Mirror. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what reminds me of the Black Mirror.
Okay. You're giving me some ideas. This is some good stuff.
Amanda, are you looking for that clicker?
No, I'm fine.
Now, Scott, you have L.A. Burning by D.C. Taylor. And
oh, forgive
it reminded
me.
Before you start, it reminded me of Burn, Baby, Burn. Just the title.
Well,
a 1965 poem.
The title is just L.A. Burning.
Burning, yeah.
Is that a typo, Scott?
It is a typo. So it's just L.A. Burning by D.C. Taylor. Or you may know him also as David C. Taylor, who wrote
Yes.
The Michael Cassidy series.
Set on the East Coast.
East
in
Coast.
New York.
Yeah, this is obviously the West Coast. This also goes into that subgenre that Molly kind of is into occasionally, which is a female protagonist avenging the death of her sister. And this is an interesting protagonist because you first notice she's coming out of prison, and she the way she deals with this guard who basically tries to sexually harass her, put in a situation, is really interesting. Then she goes to this airport, just knocks the shit out of these two guys and like takes their identity and their money. And so she can get on a plane to go to LA. And so she's this, like, you get this very tough woman. And then she goes to stay at her mom's place to set up to track down her, the killer and rapist of her sister. But her mother is basically like Michelle Pfeiffer, who is this beautiful, wealthy actress, very popular, who's kind of in her 50s and still, you know, working very hard. So she's very much of this LA Hollywood filmmaking society. And you kind of find out how she kind of was in prison as this goes on, and why she's so tough. And for those who don't know, David, he spent a lot of time writing film, a really interesting movie that is really fun with that early Tom Selleck movie called Lassiter that is just a fun night at the movies if you ever want to see it. And he kind of knows this industry really well, and the way he goes into it is really interesting. And the way he kind of looks at how these people all in this industry are in a bubble is quite interesting. It's got, of course, a little bit of a Me Too vibe. You can't help but think of the way this kind of goes in of the Weinstein case. But it's really, really well done. I hope he does some more with this character. Also hope he goes back to Michael Cassidy at one point. But it's a really, really fantastic revenge mystery novel.
Very cool.
I love revenge mystery. I think they're cool.
You love revenge.
Revenge mystery. Because then you find out why they deserve it. And that's always the justification that we need.
Vengeance is mine.
I love the sister vengeance ones just because I have a sister in particular. But like also... I also really like it when a woman avenges her man. Like, what was that Cornell Woolrich one? Walking the Perfect Square. With the widow who's avenging her husband's death by killing other guys' partners. And it was very strange and kind of misogynist, but also fascinating.
Reminds me of all those vengeance movies from the 70s by Charles Bronson.
I'm just saying, the way you described that book or that story, Molly, was just basically just the way you described Cornell Woolrich.
Yes. Although we ran an amazing article about Cornell Woolrich that made me feel so bad for him on Crime Reads. Everyone,
he had a sad life. Yeah.
He had a very sad life. And he also was never like, he was just never happy. Like, even when his books were being adapted, he was like, he chose to not go to a film premiere of one of his books because he was like slightly annoyed about a detail about the film or something. And he was like, I'm just not even going to go to the premiere.
Wow. So Molly, I see you have a book, Other People's Clothes, by Kalahenko. Did I pronounce that correctly? I'm sure I didn't.
I think so. She's based in Berlin. Kalahenko is so cool. This book is like the kind of book that only a really cool person could write. She's way cooler than me. It's about these two women who are studying abroad in Berlin, and it's the mid-aughts, so right around the same time as, what's the name? The case, the woman in Italy who people were accusing of like having helped kill her roommate.
Right. I remember that case.
Yeah. So Amanda Knox. Yeah, it's like very interested in Amanda Knox's case and kind of looks at slut shaming and perception of American female sexuality in Europe as its organizing principle. But it's also about these two women who are studying abroad in Berlin and decide to start throwing epic parties. So it's like a perfect book for if you like don't actually want to go out, but want to feel like you're going to a party, which is great for winter time. I recommend.
So we have Greenwich Park by Catherine Faulkner. Is she related to William Faulkner?
I don't know. But I thought that she did a great job. And so Greenwich Park, I brought visuals. Y'all know I always bring the visual.
Hey, we're going to have to follow your lead.
I'll take a picture of it because now, you know, they make books pretty, right? I mean, and it's just really engaging. But it's basically a group of friends in Greenwich Park that's in London, England. One of the friends befriends kind of like a stranger at her, she's expecting. And so it was at one of the classes. And she befriends someone who tends to cling just a little too closely. She's always there whenever she looks up. She's outside the door or just happens to show up in the same place. And then it starts to unravel kind of the history between all the different characters. And I know there's a trend of having different perspectives, different points of view. So you have one character that acts one way to a character, but then when you read their point of view, you get what they really think. But I thought it was great up until the very last sentence. So it's one of those that if you stick with it all the way, you'll get a payoff in the end. So that's
she's
my second.
She's a debut author.
Yeah. Yes, she is. And she was, she's gotten some good blurbs here by Ruth Ware. Zakiya Dalila Harris. And so it's good. I enjoyed it up to the very last part. So.
All right, Scott, we're not allowed to talk about any noir books, but you have Paris Noir.
Paris Noir, forgive me. I meant to put Paris Noir, the suburbs. They've done, this is the outskirts of Paris.
I got to stop you. This is a test. Can you pronounce the name of the author with a French accent?
Oh, go to hell, Hopin. The sad thing about this is I'm sort of good friends with his boss, believe it or not. So I hope Oliver never
give it a try, it. Scott.
I'm gonna go with a Hervé Delouche.
Oh, that sounds pretty good.
Good.
I think
Hervé
Delouche. That sounds pretty good.
Hervé, you don't say that.
Oh, Hervé. You're right. Yeah, I forgot. Hervé Delouche.
Oh, and in Russian, H's actually turn into G's. So in Russian, Hitler is Gitler. Oh. It's your random fact for the day.
So my name is Gulpten Gay.
Yes. Yeah, your name in Russian would be Gulpten Gay. Or maybe Gulpten Gay. I don't know. That sounds better. I like that one better.
Yeah, Vol Capitan.
Spell it with an X. The Russian.
I'm sorry, Scott. Go ahead. Did we throw you off?
I forgot what
our language lesson. About
a Paris from all the suburbs. Which something tells me we're going to be talking a lot about Akashic Noir books this year. This is to me like a really good example of what they do best. It covers the area really well that they're talking about. You get a lot of different perspectives and a lot of different stories. So it's not only different angles of the area, it's also different angles of what is noir. There's three stories, or a lot of stories that deal with the Muslim community and how they're marginalized in France. Mm-hmm. There's some really fun, and actually there's funny gangster stories that are in it. And then there's a really interesting story about this very frumpy woman who kidnaps basically this model or movie star, and her revenge is not to get money from her or to kill her, but to basically make her fat and ugly and then put her out in public.
Wow.
And then there's also this another really wonderful story that I love, that the best way I can describe it is this man and woman who basically have an experience like deliverance, but it kind of ends up being kind of couples therapy for them. So it's once again, it's a wide array of stories. As somebody who doesn't know anything about Paris, much less the Paris suburbs, I learned a little bit more about that area, it worked really well. The stories were incredibly well written. And the only problem I had with it is that it introduced me to a bunch of writers that are translated here in the U.S. So I'm probably now interested in three or four really really fantastic writers that I cannot read.
We've made some dated references. I referenced Charles Bronson. I'm not sure that, everybody's going to get that who's in their 20s.
Bronson is timeless.
There we go. Thank you, Molly. And Deliverance, Scott. Deliverance. I remember that was a wild movie. That was absolutely a wild movie with John Voight.
If nobody's seen Deliverance, they kind of know what you mean when you say Deliverance.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
Yes. People may never have seen it, but they know something bad happens that you don't talk about.
Okay, yeah. Something bad happens you don't talk about in the woods. Like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yes. Oh, yes. God. Don't remind me of certain. I don't want to remember all the wood scenes.
Yeah.
But Hopton, I have my third book and you're going to get me because it has to do with a serial killer. I know I'm always bringing up the serial killer. So it's crime fiction. It works. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. It's Notes on an Execution.
Oh, it's so good.
Yes. And the writer, her name is Danya Kukafka, and she is a literary agent. But she is also a writer, and she did an outstanding job on that book. So basically, a man is scheduled to die in 12 hours, right? And so the book, our chapters told through the eyes of the women who have come through his life. And so you see the mother, you see the girls he grew up with and how they've all influenced or impacted, or he impacted them. And it's great. I mean, she's got some pretty good lines in here. He of course is on the walls unit in Texas. So I guess if you want to make sure that he's actually considered on the row. It's in Texas. So a little shout out for Texas a little bit, I guess, in here. But yeah,
well, I'm going to warn everybody here that you guys do such a good job of describing your books. And since it's on this podcast, that if I interview any of the authors you've mentioned, I'm just going to take your descriptions to also open it up.
Quick shout out to the cover color for that book. Like, it's so beautiful. And this color is the color of the year. It is called Melodramatic Purple. I really recommend it. Everyone should be wearing this.
Yes, it is nice.
With your copy of Notes on an Execution.
I just go with the basic black.
I know better than the asset, but is that true? Is that an actual name of that color that we talk about?
It actually is, and it's really popular, and I just bought a coat that color, and I love it.
And Amanda, I do have to ask, and I know you're a very moral, upright person, but nonetheless, are you plugging this book because it is that good? But also, are you just trying to suck up to get a literary agent?
So anyone will tell you that I read so much. It's uncanny how much I get. No, the reason I mentioned this one is this almost goes into a literary fiction. And that's what, because it doesn't have your typical, like, you know, run and get to the end before something happens. It has a little bit more of looking around, and it kind of creeps you out a little bit. And if you've ever wanted to get in the mind of a serial killer, it's actually kind of normal. And that's in a really odd way. And those are the characters that we remember from movies, right? It's not just the really bad ones, but the ones that actually reflect something else that we might recognize, which kind of makes you look at yourself and make sure that you're in a healthy place, right? But no, I think all the ones that I've looked at, Greenwich Park, I liked because, and it has a pretty cover, Molly. I just like ones that keep it interesting, right? But still kind of dabble into the stuff that we may not want to talk about, but we're still fascinated to hear about. So, yeah, I just thought she did a good job.
And Amanda, so, put that book up again, Notes on an Execution.
And it's
does that match her scarf?
No, her scarf is...
It's close one. Put it back up. Put it back up. She color coordinated her scarf with the book cover.
That actually wasn't my intent, but now I'm worried.
It's still, it's a beautiful palette. You don't want to match too much, you know?
That's right.
You have the...
I'm just going to really feel weird walking into the Western Wear store asking for Melodramatic Purple.
I don't think you'll find it there, sadly.
But here's the first line, just so you know. It says, "You are a fingerprint, period." Now that makes you either want to read more or close it and run. So, you know, different reactions.
CSI.
It reminded me of this. So there was like this trend in the 90s where it was all like, oh, let's see how fucked up we can be in our imaginations. Can we write from the perspective of a serial killer? And like all the true crime books in the 90s were all like, oh, these monsters. And then now it's more like, oh, let's look at serial killers as like a failure of policing, or like, let's look at serial killers through the perspectives of like their victims, not through like looking at the killer themselves, but more looking at the lives that they cut short and like the impact of cutting short those lives on the people around those lives. And that like change happened in true crime. I think, I especially noticed it in true crime when that, that book came out about Jack the Ripper's victims. That was like, oh, actually only two of them were prostitutes. And that came out like 5 years ago, maybe. But there's a lot of fiction now coming out too that's really focused on, oh, here's a serial killer. But you know what's more important than trying to figure out anything about the serial killer's thoughts or perspectives is trying to figure out the impact on the people around them who they hurt. And Dear Miss Metropolitan, that came out last year, was another really good example of this by Carolyn Farrell. And it also has some purple on the cover. So I just really want to recommend that one as a follow-up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And last thing before we get to Molly's third book is there was a book written by Caretha Mitchell called Living with Lynching. And her book was about plays written by African Americans about lynching, but from the perspective of the lynch. And it's so, just as you discussed there, the people who suffered from it, they have families, and she wanted to give a different perspective on lynching. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. But your last book, Miley, Simon Jacobs, String Follow.
Oh, yeah. This one's like a fucked up horror novel that I really liked. It's about a bunch of teenagers who are on the internet too much, and the internet is like bad. But there's also supernatural evil forces that are trying to infect them with bad thoughts via the internet. So again, surprisingly plausible. I think that's the theme for me today, was just surprisingly plausible narratives.
I think Amanda and I don't want to speak for Amanda. We have kids. We're like, please let it not be plausible. We have kids.
I feel like we're fighting this. We're just fighting the system. We're like, no, get the book, right? The book. And instead, it's all, everything's digital. So it's like, I don't know. Are we fighting the losing battle, trying to limit the technology? And it's weird.
Yeah. So you bring this up on a slightly off topic, but I was at the bookstore yesterday. The parent came up to me. He was trying to find something for his son. And he was first got a Stephen King book. And then he said, because, can you think of something else that's horror? I'm trying to get my kid off of horror. And, okay, I don't want to say, you know, he doesn't beat his kid, but there was part of me that just said, you're not a very good parent.
Like, does he not want his child to grow up to be one of the nicest people on the planet? I love horror fans.
Well, yeah, that's true, but it's just like, it's like he's reading. Get you know, just let him follow his passion of what he wants to read, and he will find other books outside of that genre as it goes on and find other things. So it's just kind of, I was like, so, I mean, do you force, like, are you like always trying to like steer your kids of what they should read?
I know my daughter, hell no. I mean, she's incredibly independent. So yeah. She just, where the most surprising thing is some of the books that she has out of the blue said she's reading, or actually books that I read like within the past 5, 6, or 7 years. And so she is, but where she goes with it, she goes. All I can say is, you know, we've raised her, we're raising her to the best of our ability, teaching her what we can, but she's got to live her life.
Are you a library family?
Yes, we are. Library and bookstore, let me go there. Like that, that's where I go for fun. All right. And so my kids have just learned that about me. So, but I don't know. I like introducing the kids to like classics that they really probably won't look at until they get older. But like, kids should know about Animal Farm. I mean, Animal Farm teaches you so many things in a very smooth way that, I mean, at some point it got so bad, I wanted to buy Animal Farm for everyone on Facebook and say, read this, and then nothing will shock you again. Right. And so, I think
it's responsible for my extreme crush on Trotsky. I will say, reading Animal Farm too young can lead to a crush on Trotsky.
Okay.
He was handsome.
Leon Trotsky versus Vladimir Lenin. Who shall we pick?
Trotsky was much more attractive.
But it's so hard. They have a lot of variety now. So you're everywhere with it. It's just everything's so different. But
and actually, I do need to clarify, and thanks, Amanda, for your comments, because it did make me think there are certain books I have said I don't keep her from reading books, but I do say you should read this book.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. But you don't go, yeah, you know, don't read this genre.
Oh, no.
Or you're not trying to, like, you know, steer them clear of, you know, different genres.
No, I mean,
just thinking how many great horror writers there are.
But I will say, once you start reading a certain genre, it's hard to go back to the, you know, once you start dealing with the thriller beat, it's hard to talk about the landscape for 5 chapters because you're so used to.
No, I can do that.
Yeah. So it's a good one.
We need to go ahead and wrap this up. So I'm going to start with Amanda. Give us your 3 books again. Then we'll go to Molly and we'll close out with Scott.
Yes. So my selections are The Violin Conspiracy, Greenwich Park, and Notes on Execution.
Molly?
And my 3 picks are also The Violin Conspiracy. other people's clothes, and string follow.
And Scott?
Corey's Blood, L.A. Burning, and Paris Noir, The Suburbs.
And mine, The Spook Who Sat by the Door. I noticed that Amanda and Molly have a lot in common when it comes to choosing books. That's very cool.
Great minds.
And to some degree, in a slight defense, I will have my Black History book is coming out next month. So you will, I can.
Oh, no, that's cool. No, that's cool. Well, once again, thank you for listening to the Diverse Voices Book Review podcast, our crime fiction picks of the month, or this month, crime fiction and fashion color picks of the month for book.
Yeah, I'm going out now and trying to find a melodramatic purple pearl snap shirt.
It's perfect for your spring fashion edit.
That's, yeah.
And for those that are just listening, everybody is rocking different colors on this Zoom. We have black, we have purple, we have, what color do you have on, Molly?
Oh, it's millennial pink, but it's now slightly outdated by melodramatic purple. Melodramatic purple has supplanted millennial pink.
And Scott, what color are you wearing?
I think I'm wearing hobo green and tan. And you know what? I'm not kidding. I just realized this shirt is inside out. This is how I dress for public.
It's a fashion statement. Social media. How can people follow you on social media?
Go to crimereads.com. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can go to Twitter and look up Malzatov89. And I'm on there. Yes, like Molotov, but Malzatov.
And I have one now. You can follow me on Twitter at amorebooks and Instagram at amorebooks.
Excellent.
Yes.
So I'm going to start trolling you now.
Okay. I'm fairly new, so I'm sure you have many, many more followers than I do, Hopin, but I'm working up to it.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of followers. I am not that good at the social media thing. Scott.
Still a little bit of Man Without a Country, but if you want to hear my opinions on Western films, because you just can't get enough of my opinions, you can check me at Talk in the Saddle. Other than that, I do want to say now, I want to like write a script for like a kick-ass 80s action movie called Mazel Tov 89.
I really like it because people think that Molotov cocktails were a Russian invention, but they were actually invented by the Finnish to throw at the Russians.
Ah, interesting. Well, thanks everybody for being on Diverse Voices Book Review. Scott, Molly, and Amanda.
Always a pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopin Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions. You can follow the show on social media. Under Facebook and Instagram, it's Diverse Voices Book Review, or Twitter under @DiverseBooksHay.